Word of mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Between 1978 and 1988, the murders of seven women in New Hampshire and Vermont were attributed to the Connecticut River Valley serial killer. Investigations of several suspects and one deathbed confession went cold, and the killer was never found. Novelist Joseph Olshan makes a bold debut in the crime fiction genre with Cloudland, set in the Upper Valley Village where a victim was found. Cloudland is a rarely traveled road in town where the crocuses don't bloom until late April, and anybody not born in the region will always be from away. Olshan captures the fear and loss of a rural town suspended by a savage on the loose. And Joseph Olshan, we welcome you to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So you lived in the Upper Valley and at this time when the sixth and last victim, six or seven, we're not exactly sure, of the murders was found. Now, what did you, as an outsider, pick up on living in this region at the time?
Well, it's a place where people usually leave their doors unlocked and go out at night jogging on the roads and whatnot. And I just sensed that people were afraid to do these things. And I think that especially the people who had moved there from places like New York City and Boston, who were hoping to escape the kind of fear of the urban fear of being attacked, suddenly had to kind of reconnoiter and think twice about whether or not they're going to lock their doors. Mm. But especially for women who are used to sort of going out and being on their own, they had to sort of think twice as well.
And you became connected in your own way to what happened there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a few people that I knew, one who became a very close friend, were actually out walking in the early spring, and they saw what they thought was a person taking sun leaning against a tree. And she was wearing a ski parka, and they went for a walk. And when they came back from the walk, she was in the same position. And then they realized that this person may be not alive. And they investigated, and they found out that she, in fact, was dead and was the nurse from Dartmouth-Hitchcock College who had been missing since the middle of January.
In the book, Catherine Winslow, the narrator of the book, the character finds Angela Parker 2 months after she'd been missing, frozen. Her corpse, as you said, leaning against a tree. So Angela appears to be modeled after a woman named Barbara Agnew, who was the nurse who was killed after pulling over at a rest area. What are the other things about the real murders that made it into your novel? Or maybe ask another way, what did you decide to keep and what did you decide to let go?
Well, for me, I was approaching it in terms of what I could do and what I couldn't do. And I think that writers, one of the challenges of being a novelist is to understand what your material is. And so this was, I hadn't really written about murders before in this way. And so I really had to find my way into it, sort of my personal way into it. So in a way, I didn't have that much of a choice about what I put in. I could only really write about what I could write about. And I sort of felt my way along in terms of the actual writing itself. I wanted to keep the writing at a certain fever pitch as much as possible because I thought that that would make whatever story that I was telling compelling. And I found myself hoping to go back to some of these sort of brutal murders to be able to write about it, but in a lyrical way so mm-hmm. that they could be sort of digested by the reader without being overly gruesome. So I was trying to kind of strike a sort of lyrical balance between, the retelling of the events and actual writing about it, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, especially after reading the book and knowing a little bit of your writing otherwise. And that's something that a lot of reviewers actually comment on, the way that you sort of, with sensitivity but directness, kind of use this language. And I'm curious about how you found a voice as a woman. Catherine Winslow, who narrates this, is a woman, obviously. Your last book, The Conversion, I remember for having a very sensitive male narrator. She's kind of prickly, too. I wondered how you came upon this voice.
Well, I mean, she's actually a composite of three different women that I know, all of whom are very, very strong and domineering in their own way. And this is a certain kind of woman that I've sort of known my whole life. And these women are sort of like mother figures to me. They're always kind of chastening me and telling me that I should be better at what I do, and very sort of quick with an opinion. So it was really, in a way, in my blood. And as I said, the composite of these three people, they're all very, very different from one another, but they're all sort of domineering and slightly difficult. But sort of lovable at the same time.
And Catherine is also a former investigative reporter for the New York Times. She's now writes a household hints column. Did you have to find out all these household hints? I mean, can you actually get water stains out of wood with salt and mineral oil? Or
supposedly,
something?
I mean, I do know. I did do my research, and so I did find out that that these things are possible.
Well, what purpose does that serve? Also, she's a household hint person. I mean, why did you choose that?
Well, I actually do know somebody who did, a few people who've done columns like this, and I was kind of fascinated by it, and I thought that would be a great sort of counterpoint to somebody who was once in the world of really, really hard journalism and just felt that they couldn't make it and they wanted to retire to do something else, which is sort of journalistically related, but not nearly as challenging. Because this character has sort of, she was living in the big city and she retired from life and to the country, and she wanted to sort of keep her hand in the journalistic trade, but to do something that's going to be so debilitating. Mm. Although she's not really proud of it either.
Yeah. She writes under a pseudonym.
Right,
and,
right.
We're talking with Joseph Olshan, author of several novels, including The Conversion and Night Swimmer. He's made a bold plunge into crime fiction with Cloudland. This is based in part on the Connecticut River Valley serial murders during the 1980s. And the town is very much a character in this, I think. Like several towns in the region, you have, you know, the rich absentee landowners and the local caretakers. You have the college professors, you know, living next to the loggers. But it all gets kind of mixed up under the specter of this violence. How did you go at that?
Well, I mean, I think that violence is the great equalizer, obviously. I mean, everybody is going to be, anybody who steps outside their house is going to be potentially a victim of a serial killer, if that is indeed the case. And I also think that these events bring people together. They have sort of they can put aside, sort of socioeconomic differences and sort of band together in terms of trying to solve a problem that's sort of bedeviling a community.
One thing about this book, though, there are cell phones in the book. People are sending texts. So it is set in a contemporary time. Why did you choose to set it now instead of then?
I felt that setting it in the late 80s would require me to set up a time frame, mm-hmm. which I felt was going to be take away from. I felt it was going to draw the blood from the novel into places where it didn't necessarily need to go. And I felt this can be definitely contemporary. And I also thought that it might be more appealing in a contemporary. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why I did it.
Catherine has, you talked a little bit about her past, moving from the big city. She does have a troubled relationship in her past with a student. She's quick to point out he had left her class. But nonetheless, she's scarred by it, both sort of physically. He tried to strangle her at one point, and definitely emotionally. I look at this, you mentioned that you modeled her after several strong women, but yet she sort of takes this man back. Why?
I think that when one loves, one does things maybe that are not necessarily rational. I mean, they have the expression, the heart wants what it wants, and sometimes against reason, the heart wants what it wants. And I think this man made a very deep impression on her, and I think that her reaction to him is sort of part motherly, because his parents were sort of never there for them. And also, I think that he makes her feel young. So there's a whole complicated sort of psychology behind it. And I think that she is drawn back in with him, partly against her will and partly because she feels that she has to complete something.
Mm-hmm. You must have gone back to the region to research the book, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah, but I also spent a lot of time living there, so it was definitely in my blood.
How about the place? You know, if a place can be scarred, like Catherine's neck, perhaps. How do you think the memory of that time and those murders has lived or stayed with this area?
I think that it has stayed, and people are still, even to this day, working it out. When I went and did a reading in Norwich, which is 25 miles away from the town that I lived in, and the reading was packed, and quite a few people who attended the reading were people who had some connection to the victims. And the fact that somebody had written about it, they felt in a way they wanted to see what was done with the book and to sort of make contact with the person who'd written the book. And I've had that quite a bit. People who have been had some connection to one of the victims contacting me as if that's going to help them somehow deal with it. And I think it's a kind of scar that you know, it is a scar, and so it never does go away, and people have to learn to live with it.
I was wondering how people are in the area reacted, and critics in general. I mean, this is a new type of book for you.
Well, the critical reception has been generally good. I will say, though, that the negative reviews have all been from men, not from women, which is interesting because the main character is a woman. And one critic in a very prominent newspaper said that he couldn't understand why a woman who had had a relationship that got abusive would go back to the person that she had been involved with. And I think that's kind of a textbook rhetorical question in a way. I mean, obviously, if you people are going to go against their own better judgment.
They
sometimes
do it every day.
Yeah. So, but otherwise, I mean, it is a departure for me, and you know, and I'm really still learning about the form, and I think that as I sort of learn how to take on this new form, I think that I'll probably make fewer mistakes next time.
Well, so. A lot of compliments for blending a thriller and real literary style, Joseph Olshan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joseph Olshan is a former book reviewer for the Wall Street Journal, among many other things. He's also author of several novels, including The Conversion and Night Swimmer. Now, you can find more on his new crime novel, Cloudland, and the Connecticut River Valley Serial Murders, on which it is based, at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also find more and share your thoughts on what you heard on Facebook and on Twitter. Now, coming up, a Cape Cod stonemason, an artist, wrestles his white whale. That's when Word of Mouth continues.